I'd like to propose a toast.
Hello and welcome to Before Brunch. I'm Megan Cassidy.
And I'm Cassie Delaney.
And we are your weekly celebrity pop culture, social issues and all things to do with culture podcast. God, I'm butchering these intros these days.
That was good. No, you're on a kind of roll there.
Every time. I haven't got back into the flow. I think it's the omission of the Diet Coke sponsorship that's throwing me.
Well, we've gone and promoed them for free now.
Yes, we have. Not sponsored by Diet Coke, but could be.
So yeah, we go live. We used to go live every Sunday morning just before you would go off and meet your pals for brunch when brunch was a thing. And now we're adapting to the world that we live in, and we decided maybe it's better to put it out on a Saturday morning when you're off to do your little short walk in your 5 kilometres, and you can put us in your ears for 35 minutes on your way to meet your pals to have your little walk and talk.
Little bench coffees.
Yeah.
So we'll go live maybe tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. I think we got a good response to the 7 a.m. last weekend. People like having it available the minute they get up. So we're doing a Saturday buzz from now on.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Maybe we should change. Like, we have a real chilled vibe. Like, that's what a lot of people comment on, is the chilledness of it. It's not like celebrity news.
Oh, yeah. That sounded too excitable in my ears.
But that is what, it's funny because that's what I think of when I think about celebrity gossip, is those excited voices.
Yeah, and bulletins.
And on YouTube, it's like there's an expectation that the more giddy and hyper and funny and goofy you are in the intro, the better. And I just switch those off immediately. It's not the type of content I'm drawn to at all. I love relaxed tones and
ASMR stuff.
I love an ASMR buzz. I love absorbing my content like quietly and slowly.
Yeah, like Architectural Digest behind the scenes when they go into celebrity houses is really nice and chilled.
Totally, that is exactly the vibe. And that lends itself to a Sunday in the olden days.
Yeah.
Saturday was more celebrity news. We're heading out tonight. But not anymore. Saturdays are now the same as Fridays, the same as Thursdays, the same as Sundays. Every day is a lounge day
is the same day. How was your week? Do you want to do some preamble?
No, I don't need to do preamble. I do want to talk about the Oprah documentary. Or interview that we spoke about last week. But I suppose what we've decided to do is an overview of the week this week. Because as you pointed out, Monday was International Women's Day.
It was just a terrible week to be a woman.
Wasn't it?
It was just really hard. And I was thinking about this last night. And I forgot that Monday was International Women's Day. Mm-hmm. I was like, that feels like a million years ago. Here we were on Monday trying to elevate women, celebrate them, acknowledge the work that still needs to be done. Mm. And the headlines were about Piers Morgan. They were about the Meghan interview. They were about the outpouring of people who said they didn't believe what Meghan claimed during the interview. And then obviously the news from London during the week about Sarah Everard and her disappearance. So it just feels like even on the week where we were supposed to consciously acknowledge the work that needs to be done to achieve equality, the headlines, the news, and our everything was dominated by the male perspective.
Mm. Like on a positive note, I felt this year that if we are to look for any sort of grain of progress, was that International Women's Day felt, and it didn't end up going like this, but it felt slightly less extraordinary than last year, because there are more conversations now about women, how they're treated, societal, structural issues. These are very commonplace conversations. We have them all the time. Mm. It's not just isolated to International Women's Day, whereas maybe 5 years ago, International Women's Day itself was a huge cause of conflict. What about Men's Day?
I think the fact that this week is testament to the fact that we still need an International Women's Day.
Yeah.
Because we started the week on Monday. I don't know if you saw this clip, because it was almost eclipsed by what Piers Morgan said about Meghan Markle on Monday. But he also, at one point during Good Morning Britain, asked his co-host to stand up to show off her dress, saying he didn't realise that it was summertime or that the sun was out or something like that. Like, it was horrific. Mm. He asked her to stand up on live TV, show off her leg, and said it was a miniskirt. And her response was, is there nothing better to talk about? Can we move on and speak about the news? It was only when he made comments about Meghan Markle and he was called out on it by a male co-host that he reacted negatively and got up and walked out of the studio, and there were comments, or there were complaints made to ITV and resulted in him stepping down from his position in Good Morning Britain.
Mm.
But there was still on Twitter, hashtag Team Piers was trending.
And it's such a clear rebellion. And we all know Piers Morgan is a dinosaur, but it's not uncommon, these viewpoints. And it's the more women try to fight back or try to seek justice or try to point out the inequalities, the more polarizing the conversation gets.
Absolutely.
And I read an article this week about how to reason with an unreasonable person.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah. How to approach the conversations and how you only harden someone's stubbornness by attacking their viewpoint. Mm. And how what you actually need to do is try and get them to motivate themselves to change their opinions. But again, aren't you just so tired of us trying to figure out how we can help those people understand? Like,
absolutely exhausted.
That's where the female rage is coming from. And there's so much anger at the moment online. It's a really palpable rage.
I think the story about Sarah Everand and why it's really hit home for people. A, it fell on the same week that newspapers were releasing the story that a new study proves that 97% of women in the UK have experienced sexual harassment in public places, mm. which is insane. That's like every, and this is the thing that has come to light this week, is every single woman you know has a story about yeah. a time they were harassed, mm. either in public or when they felt unsafe. Mm. So the kind of the timeline of Sarah Everand's disappearance was that she went missing last Wednesday when she was walking from a friend's house back to her own apartment at 9 p.m. at night, which is not late. No. You should be allowed to be able to walk around at 9 p.m. without being worried. And there was a massive sort of awareness drawn to it by the fact that a lot of people were sharing her image on social media, asking for information, trying to figure out, asking people to check their Ring cameras and CCTV footage and all that kind of stuff to try and locate her or to try and place her, you know, at different points along the journey. So then by Saturday, the police issued an appeal for Miss Everett's disappearance and released the CCTV image of her. It was thought that she'd walked through Clapham Common after leaving her friend's flat. Then on Sunday, they released footage taken from a private doorbell showing where she was on Poynders Road. So they're kind of tracking her movements on the way home. And then by Monday, Scotland Yard had said they were open to all possibilities over her disappearance. But at this point, they were saying there's no reason to believe that she's not alive and well. And everyone was like, there is reason to believe she's not alive and well. She was a young woman on her own. We all kind of knew what was coming, really. Mm. By Tuesday, there's sniffer dogs searching gardens and streets around a search site near her route home and nearby estate. And then fresh images are released of her wearing a coat in which she disappeared at a renewed appeal for public help. By midnight on Tuesday, they had announced that they arrested a police officer with an address in Kent in connection with her disappearance. And it has transpired that this man has been taken into custody. He's also previously, only a few days prior to her disappearance, been written up for an indecent exposure. A woman was also taken into custody. Now, she's been released. I believe it's his wife. She's suspected of aiding him. And then we had like more details that the detective that they've arrested was not actually on duty at time, but still a working, serving police officer. He's later been identified as Wayne Cousins, a 48-year-old who's serving in the Parliamentary and Diplomatic Protection Command.
Mm.
So,
growing up in Ireland, there was always this undercurrent of the idea of the missing woman, the archetype of a missing woman. We had a slew of missing women cases in the 90s. I always remember driving past the phone booth in Kildare where Jojo Dullart was last seen. And my abiding memory, and God, it's not my parents' fault, but they used to say, you know, there's your lesson. Do not go hitchhiking.
Yeah.
Never hitch a lift. And in the common theme with all of the stories of these missing women was tracing their footsteps, tracing where they went wrong, tracing what they did to put themselves in danger.
Putting themselves in harm's way. Yeah.
And the fact is, when I read the tweets about if you've never held your keys in your hand, if you've never turned a corner and ran, I haven't done those things in recent times because I would not walk on my own in the dark.
This is what hit me. I read that same tweet.
Yeah.
That it described all the things you would do. And then I was thinking about the other things that we just completely take for granted.
Yes.
Like I would never consider renting a ground floor flat ever.
Oh, wow.
I would never live on my own.
Mm-hmm.
I have felt that fear of when you get into your car and you lock the door straight away. Or just the fear of walking somewhere to your car at nighttime, having not drank, having not, you could be at a friend's house, but knowing that just because it's dark, there's a threat.
Yeah.
And that's why I think the anger is so powerful, because it's at a time when you see all those things together that you realize we have for so long adjusted to a world that has told us that we are putting ourselves in harm's way by just existing, by just going out at nighttime, that we are somehow at fault. And the things that we have not done in our lives are just, it's just second nature to us. It is absolutely just second nature for me to just not, I would never walk at nighttime. I would never.
I find myself when I'm planning my jogs, I look at the weather app to see what time sunset is, and that's it. That's the limit. I don't jog after sunset. There's an awful hopelessness and a feeling that there will always be violence and it will always be a man that you would never suspect. And having these arguments on Twitter isn't going to change that. But actually, when you put this story beside the 97% stat, you realize, okay, this is an opportunity to discuss violence against women, which is endemic, which even the stats in the last few years, in 2013, there was a report done. And if you want to educate yourself, which is a really obviously great thing to do off the back of this story, NWCI has a lot of public booklets and studies and stats. In 2013, 42% of women were reported having been sexually harassed.
Yeah.
This huge jump from 42% to 97% in less than 10 years, I think, is down to our definition of sexual harassment and what it is. And now we would counter when someone grabs you in a nightclub, that is sexual harassment. And that is progress, that we can now identify that. But what is our intention in having these discussions about violence against women? There are so many things we can do systemically to start changing the narrative on this from a government level. Our reaction at the moment is very much in support and services and post-assault, post-attack. But the preventative measures, I think, are lacking. And these conversations are a huge part of that preventative plan.
Yeah.
Early education for men and boys, open discussion about what constitutes violence, what's violent at home. Domestic violence ranges from everything from physical abuse to financial control to coercion to emotional manipulation. We can have these discussions with our men and boys, and the men that aren't perpetrators that feel a guilt right now because of their gender and are fighting against that. I wish we could open up more, zoom out, look at the stats and just discuss together how we can move forward without it having to be women seeking justice equals inherent attack on men.
Yeah, and that's what I was really thinking about this as well. And it's like, how do you explain fear to someone who doesn't feel it?
Yes.
How can you explain what it feels like knowing that 50% of the people you're likely to meet that day could overpower you if the mood strikes them? Yeah. We are walking around always vulnerable by the sheer fact that we're less physically strong than men. And that is a threat. And then it's like there was an analogy there that was really, really good on being shared on Instagram. for women, going out is like if you went and swam in shark-infested waters. Mm. Not all sharks are going to kill you. There's only three types of sharks that will actually attack humans. Does that mean you're not afraid of sharks? No. And if a shark approached you, are you going to stop and say, statistically, that shark is probably not going to attack me? No, you're not. You're still going to try and get away from the goddamn shark.
Yeah.
But it's like, men think that, you know, obviously it's like, don't go swimming in shark-infested waters. But it's like, we're not going swimming in shark-infested waters. We're trying to walk the fuck home.
Yeah.
We're trying to just get on with our lives. And I think I've also been doing a story this week for Rogue about sexual harassment in the Irish media, coming off the back of the comments Piers Morgan made and some comments about female journalists about what it's been like to work in the British media with misogynistic pigs like Piers Morgan. And what I've received, first of all, I've never had such a response to a story. I asked on Twitter thinking I'd get a couple of responses, and I've had dozens upon dozens and dozens of women reach out to me with their stories. And the thing is, media is not a safe industry for women. It's a kind of industry that, listening to these stories, I would never send a daughter into. The world is not a safe place for women, but we have to operate in it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have an alternative.
Yeah.
You know, we cannot go swim in the sea if we want to protect ourselves from sharks, but we can't avoid the threat of assault.
That's it.
On our day-to-day lives.
The world is not set up for women to harness power or to have power. And it's like, I heard it a long time ago, but it's like the world is a video game and women can just never reach a certain level.
Yes.
Because of a number of things, but the physical aspect is one of them. We are just generally weaker. And there's a generalization. And what I saw under your tweet this week is an argument about generalizations, which is completely superfluous to the important discussion. It's a complete distraction. We have to generalize in order to progress. Science is based on generalizations. Science is sitting down, finding patterns and making decisions based on those patterns. If you take every case that goes against the grain, you will never progress. You'll never be able to make a decision, create medication, create a vaccine, we have to generalize. Black Lives Matter was a great example of what if we said, well, not all white people. That was a moment where we had to look at ourselves and say, right, I have to accept that I have grown up in a world where I haven't understood what it feels like to be
absolutely
black, to have that
or
fear.
Or I benefit from a society that has been designed by people who look like me to benefit people like me.
Yeah.
And I still operate in that. And I still choose to operate in that. So while I don't go around and I'm not a racist, I'm still benefiting from a system that has been designed to oppress black people.
In this situation, there is no such discourse. There's no gentle, like, women being able to calmly say to men, here's what you can do for us, because there is something stopping us from getting to that place. And it's that fight back of don't generalize. It's not all men. It may be him, but it's not me. So how can we make this? How can we apply this to Sarah Everard's situation if we are to zoom back in? For me, and I really struggled with that at the start of the week. I was like, this is a bad man. This is a sick man. But don't you think somewhere along the line, he has said something in a canteen that has interacted with a lad culture that has kind of said to him, there aren't really any consequences for violence against women.
Yeah.
Or insinuated that. Obviously, none of the men that are tweeting back to you angrily would condone what this man did. But if someone says something that perpetuates an idea that it's okay to treat women as just sexual objects, or then you can call that out, and you have to call that out so that these perpetrators know it's not okay.
Because it all creates a space. And I think all of those jokes and the I'm just joking mentality and you can't take a joke and what about the women who harass men and all that kind of stuff, they're all little pieces in a puzzle that is creating an unsafe space for women.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they're not necessarily going to turn to violence, but it's perpetuates the fear. And if you're surrounded, if you can imagine what it's like to be in a room, and this is what we're experiencing through this story, is that a lot of the time these women are the only women in a room.
Yeah.
surrounded by men. So you already have, you know that they could overpower you. You know that they're physically stronger than you. You know that they probably don't respect you because the sheer fact that there's a room full of men shows they don't value the input of women.
Mm.
And you hear sexist jokes or sexist remarks or whatever, you feel unsafe. Mm. You feel scared and you feel silenced. That in itself, being made to feel scared, just living your life, is a violent crime. It's such an uncomfortable position to be in. And that's what it's, that's why it's so hard to explain to men why we would cross the road, why we would lock the door. Like, I'll run to my car and lock the door even if I haven't seen someone. Mm. It's the ever-present threat. It's the fact that it's so plausible. I always refer to, there's this scene in Wild where Cheryl Strayed is hitchhiking.
One of my favorite movies.
It's a great film, right? And there is a scene where it's dark and she's lost and a van pulls up and a man asks her if she wants a lift and she gets in and it's so tense. And I don't know if men watch this scene and don't feel anything.
He ends up being a lovely man.
A lovely man. He takes her back for dinner, but it's
she's
so
right to be scared.
But they've set up the scene to be scary. Yeah. It's really dark. He looks, you know, ominous. You know that she's on her own. And what you expect to happen is that she's assaulted, because that's generally what happens when women are on their own and picked up in a car at nighttime by a man they don't know. Yeah. And like, that's, I think, what is, yes, not all men sexually assault women, but it's always men.
That's it. There's a number of barriers to women reporting violence, either in the home or in an acute situation like the Sarah Everard situation or a rape situation.
Yeah.
And when you look at those barriers, it becomes really clear what the work that we need to do is and what the work that we've already done is. One of them is self-blame and guilt. And that comes back to our definition of what harassment is, what consent is, what you asked for, what you didn't ask for. And we have done some work on that and still a lot of work to go. Another one is fear that you won't be believed. Yeah. That fear is, the word fear obviously permeates every single one of these barriers. Lack of effective sanctions for men who are reported.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Like, and I think, you know, there's so much to consider. The justice system isn't weighted in favor of women who've been sexually assaulted. The burden of proof is incredibly difficult in an assault case. And defense for, you know, sexual predators has often been, well, it was consensual and she revoked consent the next day. That is just a ridiculous narrative that has been spun by some defense attorney or lawyer over the years. And that's where we stick with that now. But it is incredibly difficult to go to the police and report a sexual crime when you know that out of every 1,000 sexual assaults, 995 of them will walk free. And that's not a generalization. That's a stat. 995 men who were brought through the justice system for a sexual assault out of 1,000 will walk free.
It's obviously a deterrent to women reporting it. And it's clearly a wink and a nudge to the lads that there may not be consequences for this behavior, that it's tolerated to an extent.
Yeah.
Like, in that way, we need discussion so that women can understand when there has been a crime, because often you might not even recognize a crime against you.
Yeah.
So we need discussion, and then we need political commitment to legislation that helps women who report crimes, that helps women in domestic violence situations.
Yeah. I think one of the key things that we can do comes back to gender balance in the workplace. When you think about a woman who's probably going to walk into a police station to report a sexual assault, if she walks in there and she sees three men and one woman in the station, again, you're in a situation where you immediately go to, well, I'm not going to be believed. I am going to have a barrier of communication here trying to convince these three men that something has happened to me that they just fundamentally don't understand. Mm. And they can't understand, because that's the privilege of being a man in society, is that they don't feel fear. If sharks had fucking legs and were chasing them around the streets all day, then they'd feel differently, but they don't. They walk around top of the food chain. Yeah. I think that if we then, in every single workplace, created a gender balance, a really push for gender balance in government so that we know women's needs are met and represented, and then in different industries as well, because that would go a long way in alleviating that sense of fear all the time that's ever present. And I think then, like you said, the awareness of different crimes that constitute as sexual assault or violence, because while some of them can be deemed inconsequential if you compare it to something like the murder of Sarah Everard, what they do is they chip away at a woman's ability to trust and a woman's ability to live her life free of worry and free of stress. Mm-hmm. And that is just, it's a compounding fear and a compounding feeling that just makes life a little bit more difficult time and time again. And I think that, you know, there's some light touch sexual assaults or light touch crimes that we have that we're doing a lot of awareness, doing a lot of talking about at the moment. But I think we really need to hone down and have our male friends, brothers, make sure they're talking to their friends about this. And one of them would be something like revenge porn or image based sexual violence, because the recent Discord link that we experienced here. And there were obviously there are the people who are at the top perpetuating the violence. There are people who are sharing the images, who originally received them and shared them with masses. But there was hundreds of Irish men in those Discord groups.
Yeah.
Hundreds of them. And they are friends of your brothers. They are friends of friends. And interestingly, one time a friend of ours we used to work with, he said that every Irish lad is in a WhatsApp group that's sharing images. Mm-hmm. Whether they participate in it or not, but everyone has at one stage or another been added to a WhatsApp group where they are sharing images of women. And that is just, it breeds disrespect and it breeds something that could become more violent. And if you don't respect women, then you're not going, you know, the likelihood of you hurting a woman either physically or mentally after building a life where you just don't have the same level of respect for women, I'd say it's just quite high. But Zara McDermott did a documentary there for the BBC on revenge porn and how it has impacted her. And she spoke to men in her life about how they felt about it, which I think was an interesting approach. Like her boyfriend was like, you know, why did you? She has happened to her twice that images of her have been shared after she has sent them to someone she's been dating. And he was like, why did you do it a second time? You know, why did you put yourself? And it's all, why did you put yourself in that scenario? And it's actually really sad because there's a point in the documentary where she says, I wish I could have gone back and worn something more conservative, when she's talking about when she entered Love Island, the dress she wore as she walked in, which is just a short dress, like doesn't mean anything, you know. And interesting, when she was 14 and images of her were shared amongst her friends and amongst the school, she was suspended from school for sending the image, and the boy who shared it with all the friends suffered zero consequence whatsoever. She reached out to him to speak to him in the documentary and he didn't appear, which I think was very telling.
But this is the never-ending tale. The promising young man's future is held in higher regard than the safety of the woman involved. The movie that we watched, Promising Young Woman, deals with this exact fact. It's who has more to lose in the situation. When he abuses you, when he disregards your consent, who has more to lose in escalating it? It's always the woman.
Yeah.
And that's why this is part of the culture. And you're talking about every lad in a WhatsApp group. That is the culture, and it is rape culture.
Yeah.
And we're by no means saying that everyone in those WhatsApp groups is a rapist or even a potential rapist, but they are fueling a rape culture.
Absolutely.
And that's what we can learn from the Sarah Everard situation. It might not be that our arguments on Twitter today are going to stop the next sick man from abducting a woman, but it is that we can sit down, we can educate ourselves. One thing that, like, an action that really helped me this week was just Google violence against women, gender-based violence, and start learning. Learn why it happens, learn how it's perpetuated, learn what we can do systemically to change it. And that's a great place to start. Why are the focus of the conversation needs to be on how this Sarah Everard story can shed light on the things that are happening every day that perpetuate this culture, not why is there a generalization and it's not all men? It's just so tiring.
Exhausting.
It feels sad. It feels deflating. It feels like a lot of the anger and the female anger we're seeing is futile in a way. But look, there is a place for futile female anger as well. Male anger, as we spoke about before we went on the mic, has been held up in culture. And there's a long tradition of films celebrating male anger, like Fight Club.
Yeah.
The Joker. American Psycho. American Beauty. American fucking Pie. Like, they all celebrate male anger. When you see female anger, for some reason, it's just, we try to pick apart, well, what's this going to achieve?
Yeah.
There's, maybe it doesn't achieve anything. Maybe it's circular. The angrier we get, the angrier they get. But my God, it's just time to get angry. And yeah, people are so frustrated and so tired.
And I actually think that that's a good, it's, if there are other women out there who are feeling absolutely exhausted like we are this week, Promising Young Woman is a good film to watch. Yeah. It's Carey Mulligan, and she, you know, is someone whose friend has dealt with sexual assault, and she kind of goes and seeks out revenge on men. Mm. And what is really interesting about that is because it presents all of the subtle situations, the times where men say, I'm a good guy.
Yeah, it's the good guy.
It's the good guy. Yeah. It's the guy who's like taking you home from a nightclub when you're too drunk.
Mm.
Who, you know, gives you another drink back in his apartment. And
the thing I love about it is she tries to teach men a lesson, like one man at a time.
Yeah.
And kind of the ingloriousness of doing that, taking one man at a time and teaching them the lesson.
Yeah.
Because what else can we do? Do you know?
That's it. I've, and all of these conversations, actually, I had a moment that was like really made me feel incredibly emotional a few weeks ago. When I wrote about the Discord leak for Rogue, and I went in to the groups and I saw what men were saying about women, and it was really, really hard to read. Like, it was just incredibly difficult to read. And I have two younger brothers, one is 23 and one is 25. And I just thought to myself, if they're in here, if they're part of this, like, I'll never be able to look at them or speak to them. Like, I just couldn't. One's in Australia, but Mikey was here and I was over home, and my mom wanted to read the piece, but I had to print it out for her because she doesn't like reading things off the screen.
Mm.
And Mikey picked it up and read it start to finish. And he came back and he was like, I'm not part of this. I have never been involved in anything like this. And this is disgusting.
Yeah.
And I just was like, oh, there's hope. Like,
but that's it. And there you go. That's the flip side of one guy at a time.
Yeah.
That is hope. It's one guy at a time. To read something like that and for him to have that reaction is a clear indicator of progress.
Absolutely. There is progress. It just means that the men who are out there on Twitter saying, what about the women who sexually assault men? And what about the difficult women managers that we have in work? Just stop and listen for a while and just consider what you're contributing to and consider the spaces you're making for women.
What is the important argument here? Are you having the important argument, or are you just distracting and keeping us all held back? Because when women are in fear, I know we've said it already, everybody pays. There are so many costs to having half of the population living in fear.
Yeah.
Everyone pays.
It's just not fair. It's just not. And those conversations, hashtag not all men, is silencing women. And it's saying that this conversation isn't important and I'm not willing to have it. And you're just putting another brick in a barrier against women being able to succeed. And just, it's not even about women wanting to like massively succeed. We're not asking to fucking go to space. We're just asking to not live with the ever-present fear that something bad is going to happen to us because we're weaker than half the population.
When they're arguing back with the hashtag not all men, it's a fear.
Yeah.
It's a fear that they're going to be falsely accused, or they're going to be, you know, bundled in with someone who's committed a heinous crime and they've never done. We understand, like, we're reasonable beings.
Yeah.
We know it's not all men. You don't need to say that. Like, that's,
and there's not, like,
we know that.
There aren't, there, like, as many as they would put out there, there aren't women out there falsely accusing men of harassment and sexual assault because there's nothing to gain from it.
I had my smear test yesterday. Why would you put yourself through a similar situation to be examined to ensure that someone has had sex with you? Can you imagine how vulnerable that is?
Yeah.
Lying on a hospital bed with your knees relaxed. That's what, like, it's horrific. It's you will never horrific. Feel more vulnerable.
I think if all men had to go get fucking smear tests.
One smear.
The world would be a different place. Just the one.
Cassie, thank you.
Megan, thank you. It's good to get it out, isn't it? I felt the rage.
There is rage. There's exhaustion and rage. And I think the rage, it's not helpful and that's okay. Like,
yeah.
It's not helping men to understand, and it is creating this tension that's bubbling up, certainly online, I'm sure in private conversations as well. We can't always be helpful. We can't always be helpful.
We have been helpful for
we're trying
long.
To help you.
Well, thank right. you. We'll and thank you to the men who've listened to this, undoubtedly.
Thank you.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.